Our special guest now, Byron Belitzos. He's back with us. He was back with me several months ago. Is some of his work, The Adventure of Being Human, The Secret Revelation, The Center Within. We're going to talk about miracles, the Book of Urantia. Get ready as we continue with our Christmas night show on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Byron Belitzos with us, widely published author, journalist, editor, founder of The Origin Press. He's been a student of the Urantia book for a number of years, lots of years, and has written, spoken, and given workshops on its teachings. Byron, welcome back, and happy holidays to you.
Merry Christmas, George, and it's an honor to be back. Thank you so much for inviting me again.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We'll try to do this at least once or twice a year with you. As your stories,
George, I can barely hear you. Speak up a bit.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, it's a little bit better. Thanks.
Okay. All right. I'm talking as loud as I can, so let's hope we can get through that. If I speak any louder, I'll blow up your ear or something like that. Hey, tell people about the Book of Urantia, which is a huge book, Byron.
It's a tome, and as I said when we talked in July, it takes a long time to read this thing. It's 2,096 pages. It's like 190 chapters. We don't call them chapters, we call them papers. And what is the book? It's a, what we believe, I believe, it's an epical revelation for our time, for modern humankind, actually postmodern mankind. And I think it's really worthy of deep study. That's my view.
Who wrote it?
Well, we think, and we are told, that it is a product of celestial beings and was authorized by a commission from the center of our galaxy, as wild as that sounds. And they determined that it was time for the planet to have a written revelation as opposed to some other form of revelation. Of course, the incarnation of Jesus was a revelation, but we needed a text to explain some of the mysteries of God and the mysteries of our planet. By the way, the planet is called Urantia, according to the Urantia book. That's the name of our planet. So it's a big question, and who wrote it? There's a number of celestial authors who were authors of these papers, and they have some pretty strange-sounding names, George, but there are angelic beings and super-angelic beings that authored the book in the English language, and it came through in middle part of the 20th century.
Who did, Byron, do we know who did the physical transcribing of the book?
Yeah, we do know. In fact, I met the person that was responsible for that before she died. It wasn't a channeling kind of a phenomenon, however, per se, where, say, The Course in Miracles was written down and by somebody and then typed up. It was, it had a miraculous appearance. Purportedly, that the papers, we'll call them, appeared miraculously, completely written, but they were handwritten. And over a period of 20 years, they would present these papers, they being the celestials, and then they were later typed up and much later published.
Now, the messages from the book, and we'll get into some of that, Byron, but do you think this book was also carted around the universe to other planetary systems or just us?
That's an interesting question. Nobody's ever posed that question, but let's put it this way. It was not that it was presented to other planetary systems, but that what it does is extracts the knowledge of the larger universe, including other planets, and presents it to us. In our using our concepts and our language. So no, it's not really applicable to other planets. However, it may be applicable to what we call the rebellion planets, and we can get into that if you like.
Okay, yeah. What does that mean, rebellion planets?
One of the things that's complicated about the Urantia book, George, as I think you know, is that the Urantia book says that there was a rebellion in heaven. Mm-hmm. At a certain strategic point about 200,000 years ago, where the angels of heaven in our local system of planets, the angels, some of them, went over to to the dark side, which happens and very, very rarely happens. And it did happen in the local system of 1,000 inhabited planets. And actually the chief angel, you might say, of the local system named Lucifer went to the dark side and brought over a great many of the celestial hosts with him. So these other planets that, so they were trying to persuade the angelic host of any given planet to come over with them, and they only persuaded 37 planets, and ours was one of those planets that became rebellion planets, which is why our planet Earth is such a crazy place, such a warlike and often very self-destructive planet.
The story somehow echoes Genesis, or is it the other way around?
Yeah, I mean, Genesis is a, you know, garbled ancient record of some of these early goings-on and makes reference to the Nephilim, which you've covered a lot in your show, George, to your credit, and some of the early transactions, including Adam and Eve and the fall of so-called fall of man, and that is all referred to in the Urantia book, but greatly amplified with much, much, much more detail and clarity than you get in the Bible by far.
Does Urantia contradict anything in the Bible, Byron?
Yes, it does contradict a lot of things in the Bible, but what amazes me, you know, I've been preparing for tonight, of course, George, and focused in particular on part four of the Urantia book, which is the life and teachings of Jesus according to the angelic record. And yeah, it contradicts the Bible's record of in the New Testament, but it actually affirms a great deal of the New Testament. So imagine that you've got this ancient document, and now you've called the Bible, and you've got modern editors, that is, celestial beings who are the editors. They're like editing the Bible, and showing you where it's wrong, but also showing you where it was right. And so much, I'm so impressed with the Bible. The more I read the Urantia book, which might be sound strange to fundamentalist Christians, but that's actually my view now.
And this book, the Urantia book, what's the main message, Byron, that it wants everyone to be able to take away?
The main message is love of God the Father and God the Mother for His children. The love is so great that that God will do anything and everything to save us and to aid us in attaining our eternal life and what we the Urantians call the ascension career, the career of the eternal life. And I would say that it's really that, but much more, because they're also doing something that they call, they're instituting what's called the correcting time. And the correcting time is the current era where the celestial host is working with us humans to correct the great errors of understanding about God, about the universe, about our history, and about human beings themselves.
And the book itself, you know, again, put together by these angelic beings and passed on down to us, is it like a message book? Does it have like commandments in it and things like that?
You know, I think of it as a reference text. You know, you have there's the physician's desk reference, and this is to me like the metaphysician's desk reference. It really gives a complete compendium of answers to questions, but it also raises new questions for one's own research, which is why I published so many books about it, because it raises so many new things to think about that it doesn't necessarily answer. That's kind of amazing.
Now, the work that you were doing about Jesus, are there conflicts there?
Yeah, there are conflicts with the New Testament, and definitely a conflict with Paul. The letters of Paul in the Bible and the New Testament is something that they think that the letters of Paul are beautiful. They speak of the intellectual beauty of his writing, of his thinking, but he was wrong in some very important teachings, and in particular, and most important thing to get across for those who don't have time to read the Urantia book, is very important that, you know, Paul really created a new religion about Jesus. And his religion about Jesus actually kind of ignored the teachings of Jesus. And it created a religion that said, this great man of God came here, lived, died, and when he died on the cross, he died for our sins. And if you have faith in him, you will have salvation. But the actual, this is incorrect, according to the Urantia book, and actually the point of Jesus' life, teachings, death, resurrection was to show us the way to God and to reveal God to man and to reveal that the kingdom is something inside of us. You know, the kingdom of God is within us. And that's really the point of all of this, not that he died for our sins and the blood atonement and all of that.
But Urantia does not negate the fact that Jesus existed, right?
I'm sorry, George, I didn't hear that. Did Jesus...
The Urantia book admits the fact that he did exist, right?
Yeah, that he did exist, and it's very much about the fact that he did exist. In fact, it has his biography, according to the angelic record, as I mentioned earlier, that he existed, was real, was incarnate God coming to man. So contrary to a lot of the New Age teaching, which says that Jesus was a really great guy and a prophet and a teacher and a great man, it actually affirms the Christian doctrine of the incarnation of Jesus as very much true, very much the case.
How extraterrestrial might some of this be, Byron?
How extraterrestrial is this? Well, that's very much extra. You know, the Urantia book is an off-planet product. It is from celestial beings, not from extraterrestrial mortals, humans. But it has a great revelation about life on other planets. In fact, it's got an entire chapter about life on a nearby planet, and in particular, the government of a particular planet. So it is a very much an extraterrestrial teaching, and we can go into that some more if you like.
Well, yeah, tell me about that.
I mean, you know, number one is the folks should come. One of the great takeaways of this whole discussion is that the Urantia book is a book of cosmology and presents a cosmology that I think is second to none. In that, for example, it says that there are trillions, not even billions, but trillions of inhabited planets with humanoid, human-like beings of all kinds of varieties, and it describes them in some detail, and says that there are seven great inhabited galaxy clusters that rotate counterclockwise like a great wheel around a center, and those are all inhabited galaxies.
Why did he come here? I mean, he's got millions of planets to visit, right?
Yeah, right. Why did Jesus come?
But he picks this one. How come?
Yeah, I mean, Jesus Christ.
Unless he picked them all. I don't know.
Yeah, well, in a way, he comes to all of them because he's omnipresent anyway. To incarnate as a human being, you know, the great question and one of the complicated things about the Bible itself and certainly the Urantia book is, why come to this crazy place? Why wouldn't he come to a place that could celebrate his existence rather than kill him? And so that's just showing and demonstrating the love and mercy of God, that God would incarnate and come to a place where he is not really welcome. He's coming to try to open their eyes and open their hearts at great risk to himself in order to provide them a teaching about his love and mercy. And so, you know, we can go on and on about it, but this planet called Urantia was gifted with the greatest revelation a planet can get, and that's the incarnation of its own creator to come as a human being and teach to and live among us.
And I've got to believe, though, Byron, as you somewhat mentioned here, that this is happening on every inhabited planet.
Sorry, George, I'd say that again. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, you're having trouble hearing me, huh?
Yeah, I hear you now. Yeah.
Okay. Am I cutting out or what?
No, it's just very, very light. I don't know if the studio can turn that up, but proceed. I can hear you now.
Okay. All right. Well, my question is, you know, the fact that he visited these here and, you know, had the capability of visiting these other planets as well, what was the catalyst for all of this? Why even come back and incarnate?
Because the amazing phenomenon, which is the creator, our creator, actually earns something by incarnating. And the way it works, they tell us, is that if he has incarnated, once he has incarnated in the various orders of the beings that he created, then he can have the undisputed sovereignty of his creation. And like an analogy to this, I know that sounds kind of a little bit bizarre, but just imagine that you're the head of a corporation and you really have no idea what people are doing in the different layers of workers in the corporation. So what you do is kind of disguise yourself and show up in the mailroom and do that job, or show up.
And you're watching people, right?
Yeah. And you're actually being that person. You're being in that role. And by being in the role, you are showing your love and your sense of understanding. And that makes you a great CEO of the corporation.
So well, I think you're right. I think a good CEO knows just about everything about the company, and the only way to do that is to get involved and to work and to see and to witness. So you're probably right there.
Yeah, and I think it's just a straightforward idea that, you know, you run a business there, George, and I've run my own business, and I know that I have to be able to do all the tasks of anybody in my business in order to run the business and in order to understand what their job and what their life is like so that I can manage them. And that way I kind of earn the right to say, to call myself, you know, the sovereign of the business. So it's really the same idea that Jesus incarnates as in the likeness of his own creatures in order to say that he is their rightful ruler and creator God.
Does the Urantia book talk about the, you know, the crucifixion, the resurrection, that this was a very mystical thing?
You know, in a funny way, you know, the Urantia book is not really mystical about these things. Like if you read some of the more mystical New Age things and Gnostic texts, it's not poetic and obscure. It's actually very straightforward narrative. In a practical way, telling you exactly what he was doing day by day, almost day by day, and then on up to the crucifixion and the tragic days that led up to that, and all those things we know about from the story of Jesus, but gives you about, you know, 10 to 100 times more information about each of these things. And yes, so yes, in, to answer your question, it's all about all those things in the life of Jesus you know about, but especially interesting is the missing years are supplied in the Urantia book.
And what time period are we talking about in terms of years?
Yeah, I mean, it's the from age 12, I believe, is when it's cut off. The Bible stops at age 12 or 13 and picks up again much, much later. I think he's 30-something. So there's 18 missing years of his life that are supplied by the Urantia book and purported to actually be the angelic record of those years.
When we come back, Byron, I want to talk with you a little bit more about the book of Revelation to see if Urantia echoes any of that, and also Satan. Where does that creature fit into all of this? I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. You can also email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. Hey, we're going to take your phone calls with Byron next hour. We're talking about the book of Urantia. Hey, by the way, take advantage of the 10 days free, the Gaiam TV 10 days free, so you can watch our television show, which is at 7 o'clock Eastern time every Friday. But you also can take advantage of their hundreds and hundreds of videos that are in their library. Incredible material. Go to Gaiam, GAIAMTV.com/George. or simply go to our website. There's a link there for you under hosts at the top of the homepage. Click that, the TV icon opens up, and just go and take advantage of it, and I hope you become a member. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our Christmas night show. Brian Bellitzos with us, of course, and we're talking about his works, including, of course. Now, what's the latest one that you've got out here, Brian? Is it The Adventures of Being Human? Is that the latest one, or is it The Center Within?
No, it is actually The Adventure of Being Human. It's our latest book. And our website is evolving-souls.org, where you can get that book. Thanks for bringing that up, George.
And I've got a link there for you. Let's talk a little bit about the Urantia book and what it says about the book of Revelation. Does that echo the Bible?
The Urantia book does echo the Bible in regard to the book of Revelation, in some small measure. But the book of Revelation, it tells us, was a true revelation to the great apostle John. He did receive a revelation by literally shamanically being sort of lifted up into the heavens to see the things that are described there. But so much of it was lost, George, according to the Ranch book, because of the fact that, you know, these are days when you didn't have photocopying and things like that, and people had to copy the text by hand. And they added things and changed things. So it's I published an entire book on this called The Secret Revelation some years ago that goes into it line by line and compares what the Urantia book says to what John actually saw and corrects it. It's a quite an accomplishment for us to put that together through an author who's been on your show years ago.
Do you think we're going to be in end times?
I think this is end times. And as I mentioned when I was last on the show, George, the Urantia material has been supplemented with new teachings coming from the same celestial being saying that this is indeed the end of the age. And it's what they call a dispensation. And it is coming to a close. And it will be terminated, meaning that the age will be formally ended, and then a new era will be inaugurated within our lifetimes.
Well, we shall see. What about Satan? What does it say about Satan?
I did want to add something, if I may, George. I was just in on the subject of the end times. I was with Barbara Marks Hubbard this weekend. I know you interviewed her.
I'd like.
I was at the Birth 2012 gala in Los Angeles. And that was certainly was a great effort to symbolically bring in a new era. I just wanted to let people know, if they didn't, that was, I think, a turning point for our planet, actually.
I think so, too. You know, this whole era of 2012 and what was going to happen, so many people brought up so many different things. But, you know, I still think, Byron, that we're going to be talking about some kind of celestial event in the future. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, we already are having celestial events. I mean, we're having extraterrestrial contacts. We're having, on a smaller scale, celestial events. There's healings. There's a new kind of resonance that people sense in their lives. And there's more telepathic capacities that people are reporting, and I'm certainly feeling. But something that is of planetary import, I think it's going to happen any time. I really do. I think you do, too.
Yeah, I do, too. We feel it. And let's get into old Satan again and that creature that's out there. I mean, if Urantia talks about the war, right, the fallen war, and the Bible does, Genesis does, then Satan has got to exist, I would assume. What do you think?
I mean, I believe in the Urantia book teaches that Satan was a real person and was a high angelic being who fell from the light into the darkness and was had real policies that he instituted on those planets that decided to join in his mission and campaign, which was a campaign that stated God doesn't exist at all. And it was like a manifesto of unlimited freedom, of actually an attack on the universe's structure and organization, saying there was it was incredibly it was the wrong way to go about running a universe. And Satan does not, in my understanding, exist anymore. But what was a bane of our life and our planet up until, I believe, 1985.
But then what happened?
And what we are taught and what we're told in the Urantia movement, at least one the part of the movement that I'm part of, is that there was an adjudication, and I explained this last time I was on the show. It's complicated. I'm happy to explain it again. That as part of this new era that's opening, that the celestial supervisors of the planet, all the way up to Jesus himself, determined that it was time now to put an end to the rule of Satan and his minions on our planet. And so a court case in heaven was settled, and a judgment was issued in 1985.
And they wiped him out?
Yeah, we're told that the way you enter a punishment on a celestial being is different than if it's a human being. A celestial being is given a judgment and is then given a chance to agree with the rehabilitation and punishment, and can be rehabilitated. And there's much persuasion used, but Satan and his minions, and this includes Lucifer, decided not to accept the offer of mercy and decided not to agree with the judgment. And so the consequence was their annihilation.
And how were they annihilated? I mean, what has become of them? They're gone?
Yes, as if they never existed.
Poof.
Yeah.
Did they have any kind of, well, go ahead with the butt.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to say their influence on our planet. And I mentioned earlier on the show that there were 37 planets in total that these nefarious ones had total sway over the governance of those planets, the celestial governance of the planets. Those planets, now I lost my train of thought.
Well, we were talking about the butt, whatever the butt might have been.
Right. That those the influence of these beings, even after their adjudication and annihilation, continues on in certain groups on those planets, certain elite groups on those planets. And you talk about this a lot on your show.
All right.
About the cabal that
runs, devil worshippers, all that stuff.
Yeah, and that we know, and it's well documented that they were satanic and are satanic in their intent. And so their influence remains, even though these celestial beings are gone, we're told.
Let me ask you this, too. You know, did Satan possess any great powers? I mean, how could they squash him out? You know, I thought he was a pretty almighty one himself.
In the hierarchy described in the Urantia book, and I highly recommend folks who are, you know, have a scholarly frame of mind, that they spend time and try to understand the angelic hierarchy. He's actually not that high in the angelic hierarchy. He's powerful. He's certainly more powerful, say, than a regular angel or a seraphim. He's actually a supervisor of multiple planets. But, you know, he's not something that he cannot be extinguished by higher beings in the universe. And the beings that engage in this very sort of tragic circumstance are the highest existing beings in the time-space universe. They're known as the Ancients of Days. I know it sounds kind of strange, but these beings are far, far, far superior to the level that Satan was at, and they offer mercy, they offer correction, but they are permitted to annihilate completely hopeless rebels like Satan.
That's an interesting take on all of that. The fascinating perspective as well. And who had more power, Satan or Jesus? I assume.
So, you know, Jesus, when he was incarnate here, one of the most interesting things, George, to read in the Urantia book is, you know, the creator of our local universe, Jesus Christ, is incarnate and serving us in the guise of a human being and has an encounter with Satan, as you know, from the Bible, at a certain point when he was on Mount Hermon.
And he was weak at that point. Yeah.
I'm sorry, George?
Wasn't he weak at that point?
It was in the Bible, it depicts him as being weak. In the Ranch book, it depicts him as being challenged by this presentation of Satan, and but not as weak. He's at this point he's completely aware of his own divinity, his preexistence as Christ, as our Creator, and so he's majestic and strong. And but he's confronting a very dark and clever adversary, Satan.
Is the bloodline of Jesus around? Did he have children?
We don't believe that in the Urantia book. And I know, particularly around where I live here in Northern California, is an awful lot of people that believe that Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene, and that he had children, and that they traveled to France. And as the Cathars and others believe that he had a bloodline and passed it down into the royalty of Europe, all that sort of thing. The Urantia book says that none of this is the case, and in fact explains theologically why it cannot be the case.
Why not?
The reason it cannot be the case is that when you have an incarnate deity incarnating as a human being, it can't make any sense for that being to have children. It would be terrifically confusing for there to be a bloodline related to a deity being. I mean, that only happens in Greek mythology. That's the way the universe is run.
And Byron, to the human being, what does all this mean? You know, the stories of the Book of Urantia, some of the things we've talked about tonight. What does this mean to them?
Well, I can only say what it means to me and share that. But, you know, to me, it means that we are loved, George. And, you know, this is Christmas. Today was Christmas, and all day I was studying this and feeling this love. And, you know, the whole import and the only reason to have any religion and any teaching is about love. It's about forgiveness and mercy and how we can get along with one another and build a sustainable civilization on planet Earth. And it starts with loving one another. And I don't mean just in the Sunday school sense of being nice to one another, but wisdom and the worship of a loving Father and Mother God, and having a relationship inside of ourselves with the indwelling Spirit of God. So all of these things are part of the teachings of the Urantia book, and you know, let's continue through the evening and talk about this.
And explain to us the resurrection. In your opinion, physically, what do you think happened here?
Well, I believe the Urantia book teaches us, and I sense and feel the truth of the idea and the fact that Jesus resurrected from the dead. And we're told in the Bible that he had a handful of appearances after he resurrected, and he was able to appear in rooms and then disappear from view. And the Urantia book says he had 19 such appearances in his resurrection. However, the notion of the resurrection of the body there's a technical distinction there we could get into if you like, but yes, there was a resurrection of Jesus Christ.
A physical one.
It was a physical one, not where the body itself was animated, but that his body, his form, his features, his face, his voice, all of it was represented, but it was like seeing a spirit. It was not the body itself. It wasn't the physical body. This was a spirit that could walk through walls, that could appear and disappear.
Do you think
it was not, you know, so that's a quibble. It's not all that important because it still had the form and the voice of Jesus when it appeared.
Do you think the Shroud of Turin is authentic?
Yeah, I really do, and I think it's one of the important pieces of evidence of the resurrection. You know, there's an incredible literature, as you know, and it really points to the fact that there was a supernatural event called the resurrection of Jesus.
And what do you think imprinted that image, a burst of energy?
Yeah, some kind of a burst of supernatural energy that was, what we're told in the Rancho book is this, that the celestial host who witnessed the crucifixion, you know, the suffering, death, crucifixion of Jesus, and, you know, the entire universe is watching this because this is the creator of the local universe, and they're all watching. And it was such a difficult and repugnant thing for those who loved him in the celestial host to witness his death. And then when he decided on the third day to resurrect, they petitioned that the body would be dematerialized. So the body left in the tomb itself was dematerialized. It did not, the body itself didn't resurrect, but the person resurrected, if you get me right.
Sure. Now, what about Jesus's offspring, you know, relatives, brothers, sisters? I've heard all kinds of stories about that.
Yeah, the story of the Arantia book is remarkable for a lot of reasons. First of all, you know, the Bible, as you may recall, George, states that he had a couple places says different things, but it generally says he had something like four siblings. The Arantia book says he actually had eight siblings, five boys and three girls. And one of the things that's kind of amazing that is in the missing years of his life is that his, as you know from the Bible, it's not in the Bible. What happened to Joseph is that he died, and I don't believe that is in the Bible, but in the Arantia book says Joseph died when Jesus was 14, and Jesus had to take care of all of his siblings until he was 26 years old. So he actually became a parent at that. Well, he was a surrogate parent for a very large family.
That is pretty dramatic, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty different than the sort of some of the New Age renditions of the missing years, which state, you know, in various places, you've probably had people on your show talking about that Jesus traveled to the Far East, and he studied with gurus and, you know, went to Tibet and, you know, studied with lamas and, you know, was at a leisurely time meditating and that sort of thing. The Arantia book shows him as a completely different, very practical, down-to-earth person who had to be the head of a family after his father died. His father was actually a contractor who died in an accident at a building. So it depicts him as someone who had to make a living and supply, bring home really feed and clothe a large family, including his mother Mary, until the younger kids were old enough to make a living.
All right, stay with us, Byron. We are going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, and we will take phone calls with you. Final hour here as we talk about the Book of Urantia. So get ready to make the call. And again, if you need any information on Twitter and Facebook, get up to coasttocoastam.com.